Hey, fans!
Welcome to the Pens Nation podcast. I'm Nick. Today we're going to be joined by Pens Nation founder Andy, Pens Nation writers Meg and Dan, as well as a special guest from Penguins Live on 105.9 HD2. You can also find him hosting on Inside Penguins Hockey, Steve Mears. Steve, how you doing?
Doing really well. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for coming on. So what did you think of that Pens game last night against Tampa Bay?
Well, it wasn't all that great. Looking for a better start. You figure they'd be a little more excited to play the game. Where do you start with that game? 7 seconds in, all jokes aside, that start was about as perfect as you could have asked for if you were a Penguin fan. And overall, that game, and most impressively, I think, against a pretty good team. They had the same amount of points going into that game, 53 yeah. apiece. So it's not like they pounced on some last place Devils team or Florida Panthers or some team that had been struggling. They're 9-1-1 in their previous 11. Tampa was a pretty good team. So I was impressed overall with what the Pens did to a real good Tampa team, even though they had played the night before.
I agree. We had, 11 players at least recording a point in that game. I can't recall the last time we've ever had that many guys on the score sheet.
That was pretty.
Then they scored 8 goals.
What was that, Megan?
I said I can't even remember the last time they scored 8 goals. So
yeah, there you go. I think it was 09.
Yeah, I think the good thing was that there was a lot of secondary scoring. Crosby only had 1 point, and we saw a lot of guys score last night. Goligoski, Letestu, Connor. A lot of people stepped up last night.
Yeah, and actually. Mm-hmm. The third and fourth lines were actually rewarded, I thought, pretty well with a lot of playing time in last night's game. Obviously, when you're ahead by that many going into the second, you could really kind of lay back on those first two lines just a little bit. You don't have to rely on them as heavily. And I thought the coaching staff did a good job of letting the third and fourth line guys come out there and play.
Yeah, they played really well last night.
Yeah, they did a great job. And how about Stamkos there with a penalty shot?
That poor guy.
You know what Crosby said in the post-game interview? He said how Stamkos, he'd gone crashing into the net, and I think he did something to his skates when he crashed into the net, so it wasn't sharp, and I think that's why he whiffed on the puck so badly. It was still really fun.
That was still entertaining.
I definitely found it interesting that Dan, what's that?
He's one of the only people that I know that can have a penalty shot but still have no chance on goal in the game.
Yeah, that's what I was just about to say. It doesn't happen very often. I don't think it's ever happened, actually. So let's get into some more business. Putting aside the Tampa Bay game last night, kind of just moving on. This past Monday, Ray Shiro signed defenseman Derek England to a 3-year contract extension. I think this contract is... it's a great contract, actually. Great price. I think Derek's definitely earned it. He's worked his way up from the ECHL, and he's played well in his time here with the Pens. But, Steve, what does this contract do to seeing the future of a guy like Simone Dupuy play with the Penguins next year?
Well, Simone Dupuy is coming. He's having a great season, first of all. He's over a point-a-game player, and you have to keep in mind, he's a former first-round pick. He's kind of waiting in the wings right now. He's going to complete his junior career, and then I think he's going to be an NHL player. He's got the size to be an NHL player at 6'4", and we've seen it in the preseason, a training camp, and in exhibition games. He's got a lot of skill as well, but now the Penguins have several defensemen locked up here. But you have to keep in mind, at the same time, Derek Englund brings a different element than Simone Dupuy or Alex Goligoski. I think going into the season, one of the issues I had with the defense, even after they signed McCulloch and Martin, I was like, there's not a whole lot of nastiness on that blue line outside of Brooks Orpik. And little did we know that Derek Englund would be providing that. And we had no idea that he'd become this legitimate heavyweight in the NHL and also play very well defensively and play a mean brand of defense in his own zone. So it's been a pleasant surprise. As you said, real good price on that contract. And it's a 3-year deal. I think it's manageable for the Penguins, and he brings something different. So I really like that. And even Chris Letang's brought a little extra grit to the blue line as well with this breakout season of his. So you got all these guys bringing different elements. And Simone Dupuy, you got to keep in mind, he is the future, but he's still in junior right now. So the Penguins are still a ways away from having to answer that question.
Yeah, I think they had, I think Depuy and Team Canada had a pretty hard night last night, too. So there's a lot of learning, I think, that kind of goes on from junior to pros. And Steve, just for Pens fans that don't know much about Depuy, what is his skill set? What does he bring to the team?
Well, we saw a little bit of it in training camp, and he's got all the tools. That's why he was drafted in the first round a couple of years ago. He's got the tools. He's 6'4", 200 pounds plus. He's got some really good offensive instincts in some of the preseason games that we saw. I think he got into three straight preseason games, and I broadcast a few of those with Phil Bork on the radio side. And he was really impressive offensively. Every time he got the puck, he released a quick, hard shot. And it seems like he has a lot of vision, very good passer. He's got all these tools. He even showed me a little. I remember it was one of the preseason games against Chicago. We went for a really big neutral zone hit, like one of those highlight reel, knock you into the fourth row type hits. And that showed me something different, too, because I had never seen that before from Simon Desprez. It just showed me a lot about where his confidence level was and the fact that he was willing to attempt that type of hit. I even think he missed the hit, but just the fact that he went for it told me a lot about him. Now, right now in St. John, in the Major Junior Hockey League, he's got over a point a game. So he's got offensive skills. His confidence is growing. This past year, he's worked on the English language and getting more confident in that regard as well. So he's got a lot of different tools. And that's why he was a first-round pick. So he is definitely a big part of the Penguins' future.
Yeah, and maybe I can't help but think that maybe with now, because they have all of seven defensemen signed in for the next, I think, at least 2 years, maybe that gives him even a little more time to, like, stay in juniors and develop a little more. Do you think maybe that could be a possibility?
Well, maybe junior time's running out, but also don't forget about Wilkes-Barre. And the defensemen take time. They're not just going to jump right in and play at the NHL level. Some certainly have, and especially in recent years, we have seen some defensemen do that, but with this team, I think you're absolutely right, it buys a little bit more time for Simon Desprez because they have some experienced players and very capable players on the blue line right now, but eventually he's going to get his chance. There's no doubt about it. He's going to get his chance. I think this is a great situation, though, because defensemen take time, so you could have a little more seasoning in the AHL. I know it's a different position, but look at Eric Tangrady, just another guy who's highly touted. But it takes a little bit of time. He's a forward, so defensemen take even longer than that. It's just going to take a little bit of time. The Penguins, though, can afford to be patient. They don't have to rush him along like some rebuilding teams might do with some of their prospects. He'll be able to grow maybe even some time in the coming years with Wilkes-Barre in the AHL, and eventually he'll make his appearance at the NHL level. It's only a matter of time because I really think he's going to be a great player.
Who would you see, like the Penguins right now, they're really deep in the blue line, both in the league now and in the minors. Who would you see Desprez or possibly replacing on the blue line when he comes up
in like 1 or 2 years? Just because it's so far down the road and it's so much into the future. I mean, who knows what can happen in the next month, let alone a year or two. So I don't even want to speculate just because there's so many different things that could happen between now and then. I mean, the kid's still in junior right now. Let's not forget about that. And he's going to stay in junior this season. So we're a long ways away before Simon Desprez is going to be coming up, and certainly a long ways away from him threatening one of the more established players' jobs that are on the blue line right now. As of right now, though, really liking the Penguins' defense. And you look at the game last night, Alex Goligoski, a four-point game. Chris Letang still doing his thing, an all-star. I mean, he's taking it to another level. And even a guy like Ben Lovejoy, look what he did last night. A couple of assists. I thought a really solid game, and the times that he's been able to get in the lineup, he's added something, getting in a fight. We saw that on HBO with the game. He scored his first NHL goal in, and he also picked up a fight in that game against Florida. So Ben Lovejoy's showing me a little bit of a little extra here with what he's been able to bring. It's a good problem to have. There's no doubt about it. The Penguins have a lot of talent on the blue line, and it's so important. We saw it last year with Chicago and Philadelphia, two teams that were really stout on defense, made it all the way to the Stanley Cup final. Detroit has done that for many years, a lot of depth on the blue line. So I think the Penguins are wise to stockpile on the back end there, and that's what Ray Shiro wanted to do, even going back to July 1st when he signed Zdeněk Mikhalek and Paul Martin on free agency day.
Yeah. I love the fact that you brought up Benny Lovejoy in that HBO special. Took a fight. He had his first NHL goal. Took the puck to the face. I just thought he really shined on that episode. I think it was episode 3. He seems like a really well-mannered, soft-spoken guy on the team. It was kind of nice to see him get a little bit of that camera time on there. And
he had one of the underrated quotes in episode one, too, when they moved all the furniture out into the hall. We're going to find out and then do nothing about it.
And then do nothing about it. Yeah, I loved his quote. He's like, "Can you tell I got hit?" such a hockey player quote, really. I mean, just the jabbing and everything that goes on behind the scenes. Well, Steve, speaking of the 24/7 series, the season finale was last night. I loved it. I know a lot of Pens fans loved it. A lot of Caps fans loved it. But beyond that, I think hockey fans in general were really just buzzing and just loved this series. What do you think it has done to help kind of promote the sport?
Well, I think sports fans in general would love it. I would love to hear the reaction from just plain old sports fans in the Midwest who might not know a thing about hockey but are being introduced to the sport just by this show. And I know if you're a sports fan and you might like football and baseball and basketball, but you watch that program, you'd be captivated. I mean, it was some compelling TV, the way that they had the Hollywood scenario at the start with one team really struggling and the Penguins just loving life and playing jokes and having a good time. And then eventually it kind of switched around a little bit. Penguins lost a few games. Caps got it turned around. And at the end of the day, it was the Caps that won the big game and the Penguins lost and they were the dejected team. So you watch that. Not only was it compelling TV, but it was also a really, really cool look at the sport that none of us had ever seen before. We've never had the chance to go inside the glass like that during a game to hear what the players are saying and have it completely be uncensored. We've had broadcasters, NBC and Versus, they've all done the microphone and the player thing before, but nothing like this ever. I mean, normally it's just, "Come on, boys, let's go, boys, let's go." And that's all they play. The guy's sitting on the bench and you're like, "Well, that's great. I can hear that in my men's league team every night when I play." You know, but this was great stuff. And that's how it is too. A lot of people commented about the swearing and everything, but that's hockey. That's how it is around these guys. And it's part of the culture and everything. So I was absolutely thrilled by the way that they had the shows go with the different storylines, showing the different personalities, showing the guys away from the rink, at home a little bit. So I think it just was the perfect program to illustrate how great this game is and also some of the characters that you have between the Penguins and Capitals.
I think Dan's got his speakers up pretty loud. Getting a little feedback from you, Dan. What more could be said, really? I thought it showed the raw emotional side of hockey, and that's something a lot of people don't get to see. Like Steve was saying, a lot of what you see on the NBC telecast or Versus or whatever, when they do mic them up, it's just a quick soundbite. And they could put it on TV because there is no swearing typically. So they're more selective. With HBO, they put it all out there, I thought, and I thought they did a great job. And I wouldn't be surprised to see an Emmy or two nomination going their way.
A kill of if Crosby and the Penguins won the Emmy for the HBO thing, but the Capitals didn't, and Crosby accepted that. Boy, but that, you know, he would have a Stanley Cup, a gold medal, and an Emmy. And I mentioned still had enough.
Wow. Andy, what were you gonna say, Andy?
I was glued, glued to my TV when that thing was on. I watched them all multiple times already, and I just like the fact that, you know, obviously you saw what was on the ice, but I like how they sort of went off the ice too with them, you know, with like the Christmas parties and going back to Bilesma's house and everybody's house. I thought that was pretty cool, just to see what they do off the ice as well.
Yeah, definitely. Do you think there's any chance they make this into like a DVD set? Like maybe they put some bonus features on?
I think they make a lot of money off of it.
I know what I'm asking for Christmas then next year, if that's the case. Yeah, they did a great job leading up to the Winter Classic. Although it wasn't the result we would have liked as Pens fans, I thought still the atmosphere, the game, and everything leading up to the game, like everything was fantastic, top notch. I thought the Pens organization did a great job of putting on the event. And speaking of the Winter Classic, I guess, what were some of your closing thoughts on the event, Steve? Like the venue, like how do you think it lent itself to hockey? And how do you see just the overall future of the event itself?
Well, the event and the spectacle, that's what it's all about, really. At the end of the day, the result doesn't matter. Even if the Penguins had won 8-0, it still is all about the event. It's about having 68,000 people there in a football stadium. It's about the colors and the fireworks and the tailgating that went on and the rain and the elements, whether it was snow or rain or wind, whatever they had to deal with out there, the guys wearing the toques and everything, the cool jerseys. I mean, that is what the Winter Classic is all about, and that's what it's been about now since it started. So, it's disappointing that the Penguins lost, but it was about so much more than that. It's about getting people into the sport of hockey that might not watch a regular season game between the Penguins and the Florida Panthers, but they definitely will tune in on New Year's Day on NBC to watch the Winter Classic, no matter which teams are playing. So there are a lot of things that were really great about the event, the celebration of the city throughout the entire week, hockey in Pittsburgh, the community rink that the Penguins built in the parking lot next door to Heinz Field. I got a chance to skate out there, and it was one of the coolest experiences, hockey experiences of my life, just because I'd never played outdoors before. So you had all these people that had the chance, thousands of them, that had the chance to experience outdoor skating and outdoor hockey because of that community rink. And the game was really cool. I had the chance to be the ringside reporter on the radio broadcast. So I was right down in the middle of the cauldron there, and right in the middle of the firestorm with all the fans going crazy, hearing that noise, that roar when Malkin scored on the breakaway. And also dealing with the weather and just kind of being the weather reporter out there as well. It was an amazing experience, certainly one of the highlights of my career. And probably 20 years from now, I won't be able to tell you what the final score was. And I probably wouldn't have, even if the Penguins had won 3-1, but it doesn't matter, because just to be a part of it, to be there, whether you watched it on TV, listened on the radio, or were right in the middle of it as a player, it really doesn't matter. It was just an honor to be a part of it.
Going along with what Mirzi was saying, I actually had the chance to work the community rink all week. And yeah, he's right. The just looking around and seeing Heinz Field on one side, and then you see over the glass, you have the city, the skyline there. And then to have it with the old boards and glass from Mellon Arena just that definitely added something. And apparently somebody has a dog that won't be quiet.
That's my dog. Sorry. Haley, shut up!
We're so professional here, Steve.
Bring the dog on. Why not?
He's got something to say.
Yeah, she doesn't watch hockey, so I don't know what she would have to say about the Penguins.
That's a disappointment. Well, also during Winter Classic, as we all know by now, Jordan Saul made his comeback season debut there. And we all know the plan going into the season. Have Saul center that second line with Evgeny Malkin on his wing. And we've seen it almost two full games now, off and on. And Kennedy was on the line last night. I thought he did a great job. I was skeptical of that decision at first, although I understood why you would want to put someone like Kennedy on that line. You need to get him going and everything. But I thought Cook would have been a great fit on that line. He would have opened up a lot of space up there for Staal and Malkin to do what they needed to do. Could you just describe a little about what having Staal center that line means to a player like Malkin or a player like Kennedy?
Well, first of all, Tyler Kennedy and Jordan Staal are familiar with each other from their work on that third line, that great third line with Matt Cook. So there's some familiarity there with Kennedy and Staal. There's also some familiarity between Staal and Malkin going back to Jordan Staal's rookie season. They played quite well together, so there is some familiarity there on both sides. I think it's a great idea, and I love getting Evgeny Malkin a little bit more of an offensive player on that line, because he needs a little help, and that's no disrespect to Max Talbot or Aaron Asham or Matt Cook. You got to have him surrounded with some offensive players. Sidney Crosby's playing with Chris Kunitz, who is a top six forward. He's not a 50-goal scorer, but he's a top six forward. And Pascal Dupuis, who can play just about every single role you can ask.
Yeah.
And he's got the on both sides, and that's been a very good line. Evgeny Malkin hasn't really had that type of help probably since Ryan Malone or Peter Sikora were here. So he needs a little bit of offensive help. And Jordan Staal, too. It's time for him to kind of emerge as more of an offensive player. As much as I love him as the third-line checking center, he is a very high draft pick and has the tools to be a premier offensive player in the league. So why not throw him in the middle there? As far as having Tyler Kennedy on the wing, as of last night, so far so good. I mean, it's only one game, but can't complain about that. I thought Tyler Kennedy was outstanding, even though he's not quite familiar with playing the left-wing side. He's a right-handed shot, but we've seen him do some great things on that left side, including the goal that he scored last night, skating down the left wing. Then he's able to cut toward the middle, and as a right-handed shot, you're all of a sudden in a good four-handed shooting area. So, and he probably waited a little too long on that goal he scored, but hey, whatever. They all look the same on the score sheet. And Tyler Kennedy is kind of, he's also able to do some of those things that you talked about with playing with a gritty style and creating some space, retrieving pucks as well on that line for both of those guys, Staal and Malkin. So far, so good. We'll see how it goes. And if it doesn't work out, then I'm sure Matt Cook would be a real good candidate to play on that second line as well.
I agree. One of the bugaboos about Malkin's game is his faceoff percentage. And going into that Lightning game last night, he was, I believe, 36.1%, which was good for 334th in the league. And
oh, Lord.
Jeez.
Like, that stat just jumps off the page to me, really. I think definitely offensive zone faceoffs, defensive zone faceoffs, having Staal on that line more full-time is going to really help win a lot of those situations and ending up putting the biscuit in the basket a lot more often. What do you guys think about that line last night and what we'll start with Andy, go to Dan, and go to Megan. How do you think Malkin is affected by that?
I really like the line personally. I don't really have a problem with it. I think Staal should help you a little with face-off since Malkin's sort of struggling in that area, and hopefully Malkin can get some more chances. And I think, like Steve was saying, Stahl's definitely earned his way up to be the second-line center. He was great. Great third line, but he's sort of high up there, one of the higher salaries on the team and higher draft pick. So he's definitely earned his way up there, and I expect big things from that line.
Yeah, that's pretty much. I agree with Andy. I think on the TV side, Bob Arey said that it was the first time that Tyler Kennedy and Evgeny Malkin switched sides on the wing and played the opposite wings, and at first I thought, ooh, this probably won't be very good, but as you saw from the first 7 seconds of the game, that it actually worked out well, because if Evgeny Malkin would have been on the opposite wing, he probably wouldn't have been there to get that puck, and it probably wouldn't have been 1-0 7 seconds into the game. But that line, I think they should keep it together for as long as it works, really. That's the if it ain't broke, don't fix it approach. And let's just face it. We bash Tyler Kennedy, or at least I do, for his lack of production so far this year. And
oh my God, Haley!
Naturally, he scores. That's all right.
Meg, does Haley want to say anything?
Yeah, I do. Sorry, I'm trying to shut up my dog.
That's all right. I'm just messing with you.
Like, yeah, time will tell exactly how good that line will be, but so far, so good. And I think having Staal on his line, obviously, it'll help Malkin's offensive production, not because he has more of an offensive player to play with, but also with Staal in the middle taking the draw. That's one element that Malkin doesn't have to worry about anymore, so he can just focus on purely, driving to the net, creating chances, shooting, all that good stuff. So that's another way that I think having Staal on the line will help.
Shoot more, shoot everybody. well, yeah. What else is really left to be said about that, I guess? We've talked about the depth at the blue line earlier with the England signing and Depuy, but the depth at forward just seems unbelievable now that Staal's back. And if we look at, the guys that, are talked about sitting as a healthy scratch every game in and game out, basically, we've got, Asham, Rupscott kind of talked about, Connor's sat a game or two. Comrie's not even in right now with a hip injury. He just had hip surgery. What does Staal's return really mean for the depth at forward for our team?
Well, you've seen Aaron Asham as he was a healthy scratch last night. I think that says a lot about the depth. The fact that a guy who was a big part of the Flyers Stanley Cup run last year and definitely brings a lot of tools is a healthy scratch. And that really says a lot, if you ask me. Now there is going to be that problem. They will have to scratch some people. There will be injuries, too. Let's not forget about that. It's inevitable. There will be some players who get banged up in the second half of the season. So they will eventually need some of those players. Eric Goddard is going to be called upon once he gets healthy again. And maybe Mike Comrie, once he gets back I know he's a few months away, but you never know. And Mike Rupp, absolutely. Aaron Asham, Chris Connor, some call-ups from Wilkes-Barre might be necessary. Dustin Jeffrey, Eric Tangrady. So there will be the possibility of getting all these guys back in. They will have some roles eventually. But as of right now, with that lineup that they had last night, you got to love it. Second line, very good, at least in their first game together. Kennedy, Stahl, Malkin. Third line, I thought worked really well. Letestu picked up another goal last night. Chris Connor, a goal. I thought Matt Cook had an awesome game, especially in the first period. And then you got the best combination of fourth liners, I think, in the NHL between Craig Adams, Max Talbot, and Mike Rupp. I'll take that line as a fourth line any day of the week against any other team's fourth line. I don't care who it is. So, yeah, the depth at forward, when you break it down that way, awfully impressive.
Yeah, and I think it's going to go a long, long way come Stanley Cup playoff time, where depth means a heck of a lot to a team.
Oh, I have a question about, you mentioned, you said Eric Goddard. Do you think we'll get some playing time once he's gotten healthy again? I know, like, we talked about earlier, Engelund has become like a heavyweight, you know. I think Biz Nasty tweeted that he's the only guy to ever beat Chuck Norris. So you seem to think that even with Engelund coming out and fighting guys like Jody Shelley and Colton Orr, you don't think that Goddard become expendable?
Well, we'll see. We'll see about that. The Penguins have some unbelievable team toughness. There's no doubt. You know, everybody from the top, Sidney Crosby will fight someone if he has to. Tyler Kennedy will fight someone if he has to. And you throw Asham and Rupp in there. There's definitely team toughness all over the place. But we have seen some cases this year where Eric Goddard has been the policeman and has done a pretty darn good job at it. That game, home game against Toronto, perfect example. The guy Jay Rosehill from the Maple Leafs takes a run at Sidney Crosby, and then he has to answer to Eric Goddard to jump right in, and that's exactly what you want to see. So we'll see what happens when Eric Goddard does get healthy, but you do need to have some of that. This is a team that has star players, and they need to be protected. I think it was that Phoenix game, too. The rest of the way, after the 10-minute mark, Englund fought Pyatt, and the rest of the way, it was a tough guy playing with Sidney Crosby and a tough guy out there with Malkin for the rest of the game. And there will be situations like that, whether they're playing the Flyers, the Toronto Maple Leafs, the New York Rangers have some guys that like to run around a little bit.
Yep.
So as far as toughness, I don't think you can have too much. And once Goddard gets healthy, maybe he'll get a chance to get in there. But it's obvious that he's kind of the odd man out when this team's completely healthy.
Well, Steve, and on a different note here, kind of taking things a little bit different now, let's look at some more just polls and All-Star Game stuff here for a few minutes. ESPN Insider poll, they polled 26 NHL players on who they thought was the best player in the world right now. And I don't think to anybody in Pittsburgh surprise, but 100% of those people polled said Sidney Crosby. What do you think about that? What does that say about his game, really?
Well, it's no surprise to me at all, and I don't think anybody would be shocked around the hockey world with what Crosby's doing this season. And now Ovechkin has basically dropped to third. Yeah. Ironically, there was a debate even going into the season. There are a lot of people going into the year, even with all the great things Crosby did last year, there were still people who thought Ovechkin is the best player in the world going into this season. And now he's probably third behind Stamkos and Crosby, and not just in points, but in all the things that those two guys are doing compared to Ovechkin. And Ovechkin, by his standards, is slumping this season. Meanwhile, Stamkos has been lighting it up, and Crosby's just doing some unbelievable things. It's simply stunning when you think of what he's been able to accomplish at such a young age, 23 years old, 25-game point-scoring streak, which in this day and age is absolutely remarkable. And just on a nightly basis, taking his team on his back and doing things that you have no clue. You don't know what to expect. You know, every time you go to Consol Energy Center, you just don't know what you're going to see. There's a chance you're going to see something truly magical. And Sidney Crosby's done that time and time again. I was just, I'm lucky enough to see him at practice, and some of the things that he does in practice, it's fun to watch with taking pucks off of his skates and shooting them quickly. He was stick handling the other day in between three pucks that were about one puck length apart, and slicing through all of them without even moving the pucks on the ice. I mean, this is stuff that you get to see And there is no doubt he is the best player in the world. And I think he's the best player in the world by a wide, wide margin. And obviously, other people in the NHL agree.
The scary thing is, too, just a quick comment, he's still a couple years away from his prime, too. Like, you know, your prime is around like 25, 26. And he's only 23. So if thinking where he is now, imagine how he'll be when he hits his quote-unquote prime.
Yeah, that's a great point. It's frightening. It really is. I mean, most people will tell you the prime is probably your late 20s, maybe even into your early 30s. So that is a scary sight for the rest of the NHL. And all the Penguins' core players are young. Marc-Andre Fleury is a young goaltender because goalies take a lot of time to develop. And Chris Letang is now just having a breakout season. So that's the great thing. If you're a Penguin fan, you have to be loving life because the future is so bright. And there are also so many of these other guys that are on the horizon too, like Simon Dupre, who we talked about earlier, and Eric Tangrady as well. This Penguin team, they've done it right. And that's Ray Shiro, who's done a phenomenal job building this club responsibly.
Steve.
That's Ray Shiro.
Steve, do you think Ovechkin voted in that ESPN Insider poll?
You know what? He might even admit at this point that Crosby is, at least at this moment, is just on another planet right now. That's I think if I were Ovechkin, I would realize that I was slumping, and there's just nobody that can touch Crosby. I think the scoring race is over. By the way, I think there's no chance for anybody to catch up to him, assuming everyone stays healthy. Let's keep that in mind. That's obviously a big part of it. Yeah. But it's just, if you're Ovechkin, and you see what Crosby's doing, and maybe that's part of the struggles for Ovechkin. He sees what Crosby does to make his teammates better, his line mates better, and I see him trying to distribute the puck a little bit more and trying to be less predictable as opposed to being that reckless abandon, firing away, and just being a force out there, which he did for so many times in his earlier portions of his career. And now it just seems like I don't know what the reason is, but he just isn't the same player. And Ovechkin, he could probably take a page out of Crosby's book in terms of learning and getting better on a yearly basis and working on different aspects of his game. It's just Crosby's on a different planet.
As we see from the HBO special, I mean, Crosby's our captain, and he's out there tearing it up and leading by example. And Ovechkin is supposedly the Capitals captain, and he's not even speaking up in the locker room when they're getting blown out 6-0. He's in there dropping F-bombs.
I think frustration takes its toll on people different ways. It's kind of hard to say Ovechkin's not being a leader because there are certain circumstances. I'm not defending the guy because, I mean, I'm a Pens fan, first of all. But I think he might not be as vocal of the leader, but he does the little things that he needs to do at times to get his team going. Like he fought, I think it was Brandon Dubinsky, to try to get his team going. And sometimes it's just hard to find your way whenever all that pressure is put on you. That's all. All-Star game voting just came to an end. Pens have 4 representatives. We have Crosby, Letang, Malkin, and Fleury. Overall, Sidney Crosby, by a wide, wide margin, won in the vote category. He had 635,509. Ovechkin, and this blows my mind, he had 245,180 votes for a difference of 390,329 votes. That's jaw-dropping, especially since like the whole debate is who's better, Crosby, Ovechkin, and everyone like who kind of complains about Crosby obviously voted for him in this regard, it seems. But I don't know, it just blows my mind. Interesting sidebar on the All-Star game voting: people who also got more votes than Alexander Ovechkin: Chris Pronger, Nick Lindstrom, Duncan Keith, Carey Price, and Sergei Bobrovsky. Bobrovsky, he's a rookie.
That's embarrassing.
Is it, Steve? Do you think it's indicative of Ovi's play this year, or do you think it's indicative of the fans, like, just not expecting Ovechkin to rise above? You think they're getting tired, Dan?
I'm getting tired of them. Shoot.
We can't completely count on your opinion. Like, I have a couple of friends I went to the Winter Classic with who are Caps fans, and Believe me, there were a lot of them in our section too, and believe me, they are not tired of Ovechkin.
Definitely not. Granted,
they're also biased.
Well, they should be. They're capable.
Steve, what do you think the difference is this year for that, just that discrepancy in votes?
As far as the votes go, I think it's just the strength of the fan bases of the Philadelphia Flyers and the Montreal Canadiens. I mean, those are two of the biggest fan bases, and it is just a fan vote, so I don't think there's that much merit in that. And the Caps have a strong fan base, but it's not the fan base of the Capital or the Flyers or the Montreal Canadiens. We know that, or the Penguins for that matter. So, and Ovechkin's a great player. He's going to be a phenomenal player, probably a Hall of Famer when he's all said and done. He's also still very young. Let's not forget about that. It's just that there are some things he needs to work on. There are some things the Caps as a team need to work on as well. But I'm not going to take anything away from Ovechkin just being, I think, the most explosive player in the NHL and one of the best goal scorers without question. He's big, he's fast, he's got all the tools and everything. He's got a lot of tools, actually, that Sidney Crosby doesn't have, but it's about Crosby's work ethic and the things that he does that are beside the raw talent that make Crosby the player that he is and make him so impressive. But let's face it, Alexander Ovechkin's a phenomenal player, even though he's having an off year.
Yeah, I think the difference between them is like that. I think Ovechkin maybe has more raw talent, but it seems like Crosby, he just like eats, sleeps, and breathes hockey. Like, you know, in the off season, he's off working on faceoffs or working on a shot or whatever, and we see pictures of Ovechkin like partying in clubs in Moscow or whatever. So I think that right there just says the difference between the two of them.
Yeah, that's a real good point. I agree. I think the raw talent, the speed, the size, being 6'2", 6'3", whatever he is, that wrist shot that he has, that one-time ability, I mean, those are God-given talents that any hockey player, myself included, would love to have in their toolbox. Crosby doesn't quite have those. He's not as big as Ovechkin, and his shot probably doesn't have the same velocity and all those other things. He's not that explosive of a skater like Ovechkin is, but that's kind of the point. That's the appeal of Sidney Crosby, because he is all about just work ethic and wanting it more and battling and never giving up on any type of loose puck, 110% effort, and that's what makes him better, and that's the point of this whole saga between the two. And I think Penguin fans can be really proud of that, is the fact that Crosby, even though he doesn't have the raw ability, look at Pavel Datsyuk. I mean, that's probably he's probably the most skilled guy in the NHL as far as puck handling and the things he does, and I think way more skilled than Sidney Crosby when it comes to having the puck on his stick. But that, it doesn't matter. It just Sidney Crosby proves that it's more about heart and work ethic, and that's why he's the best.
I will say this though about Ovechkin, it's victimized Marc-Andre Fleury a number of times, but he has to have one of the best wrist shots, or one of the best shots, period, that I've ever seen in my years of watching the game. I mean, it's just insane how quick he can get it off.
Stamkos is challenging him for that, though. Stamkos has a wicked, wicked shot. I mean, I was at the November 12th game when the Penguins won 5-1, but he scored the lone power play goal for Tampa, and just there was no way that anyone, like Patrick Roy, could not have made that save. His shot is just
I'm surprised. I think somebody abducted Dan because he said something nice about Ovechkin.
Yeah.
It's
different.
Well, let's bring this down to an end. Last question before we go. We'll give this to Steve first, and then we'll have you guys answer it. Megan, Dan, and then Andy. Winter Classic next year. Who plays Pittsburgh?
You know what? I actually did hear that earlier today about someone throwing it out there that the Caps and Pens should have a rematch. Why not? You want the biggest stage. You want the biggest game. You want ratings and the star power. Why wouldn't you do that all over again while you shift the scene to Washington? But I've got to think that it's going to be involved in the New York area or the New York Rangers in some way. There are a lot of factors, and the NHL will juggle all those factors and everything as far as the venues and the day and what's available and what they can do as far as the facilities go and everything. But you know, New York's going to be involved in some way. The Rangers have yet to take part in the Winter Classic, but they will. And if it's not next year, it might be the year after or sometime in the near future.
All right, Megan.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of, like, again, this is just fans, I know, but a lot of people are saying, like, there should be a Rangers Islanders or something like that. But I think, I don't know if this is what I think it'll be, but it would be nice to see some teams from out west get involved. I know they're not quite as, like, popular or whatever, but if, I mean, they did do Chicago, Detroit, but if we, I think if they could shift it back to the west, like, if they could do, I don't know, like, Colorado. I'm trying to think of us that, like, or maybe even, I don't know how they would do it in California, Minnesota. But the, yeah, there you go, Colorado, Minnesota. But actually, the Ducks-Kings rivalry is actually, it's not very talked about, but that's actually becoming a pretty good rivalry. I write for another blog. I follow the Pacific Division, so I keep an eye on them. So, I don't know. I don't know how they would do it in California, but I think that would be kind of fun to see, like, the Kings-Ducks or something like that. Probably won't happen.
As far as who plays the Pens, I mean, well, it's obvious. Penguins Capitals from the Penn State Stadium, whatever it's called, in State College. That would be insane, I think. But, yeah, I don't think the Penguins are going to be in another one anytime soon, really. So how about a rematch of the old one, of the old exhibition game from 1991? How about Rangers and Los Angeles Kings in Vegas? For 2 points.
Okay,
that one.
All right, Andy. Yeah, to the as far as the Penguins, like what Dan said, Penguins and Caps at was it Penn State. Pens and Flyers is another possibility. I know that that's been thrown around before. But, yeah, I agree with Dan. I don't think the Penguins will be in one anytime soon again. I like Megan's idea of the West. It's just depends on where it would be played. I think it'd just be hard to control with the weather. They'd really have to keep an eye on that. I also like the New York idea. That'd be kind of cool because since New York hasn't been involved, so I to be realistic, I think New York would probably be the most likely destination to go to next year.
Rangers Islanders at Yankee Stadium.
That might work.
I think at some way you got to get Minnesota or Vancouver, some one of those teams involved out west. Also, Vancouver would be great to see. Maybe a Vancouver, New York Rangers, kind of like, what was it, 94 Stanley Cup Finals kind of rematch outside would be awesome.
But then Vancouver will wear those ugly V-striped uniforms that they wore back then.
You might be right. Nobody needs to see that. Nobody needs to see it.
Ew.
There's ugly.
Hideous.
Well, we'd like to thank our guest, Steve, for joining us today. You can listen to Steve weekdays from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. on 105.9 HD2.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
For Andy, Meg, and Dan, I'm Nick. We're out.